Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Midnight Black Mass, a production brought to you by GeorgeWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you discussions and interviews with figures from the world, entertainment, and general pop culture. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Midnight Black Mass.
Another edition
of the Midnight Black Mass, returning from my vacation. Hope all of my freaks and geeks are doing well this evening. Glad to be back here on the air. Got a big show for you tonight. Returning to the show, the rock and roll wizard himself, the one and only Mr. Gideon Smith of Gideon Smith and the Dixie Damned, here to give us an update on what's been going on with him. Talk about a big live gig he's got this Saturday night. His new album, 38, which we talked a little bit about in his last appearance, and a whole lot more of his unique and candid philosophies on life, and so much more that's to come here at half past the hour. We got the Muji Movie Minute looking at 2011's Chillerama. That's going to be fun. We've got the return of TV Casualty looking at Catwoman coming back into the DC Animated Universe. And a very loaded show, as you can see, giving you only the best as you deserve. Here are the fans, the congregation of the Midnight Black Mass, and you've supported us all this time, and we appreciate you continuing to support us. On to the professional wrestling news. Where can you see the Reverend? Well, last week you could have seen me at NWA Anarchy in Cornelia, Georgia, international television taping there at the Church of Southern Wrestling. Big main event, steel cage match for the NWA Anarchy title. The former champion, my man, the Angel of Death, Son of Satan, Azrael, taking on the Temptation. Sean Temper is the man defending in that night the Anarchy title, but also the NWA North American champion. Everybody knows it's been a very deep-seated and very hate-filled rivalry that has gone on between Azrael and Sean Temper, and it came to a boil in a bloody and brutal cage match. And you know what? We came out on the short end of the stick, and I'm not going to cry or complain about it because it was in the confines of the cage. Sean Tempers, we've never been one to wear white hats, so I can't fault you for what you did other than I hate your guts all the same. So Sean Tempers did use the stick, the big nasty of Jerry Palmer, to counter the frog splash elbow, the Passover, as I call it, and of course, ended up pinning Azrael to retain the Anarchy title. And now we go back to the drawing board because I don't know when he's going to be granted another shot at that belt. And then, of course, what happened after the match, this new NWA Elite Alliance really getting a big pair of balls coming attacking the rejects like that. But they've already put Strickland out of commission. What do they do? They attack me, they slam me up against the cage, they throw me in there. I try my best to fight, but I'm just a manager, not going to be able to fight off an army of wrestlers. But I gave them a few good shots, and they took me out, handcuffed me to the ring, and made me watch as they dismantled Azrael. But a lot of the Anarchy superstars really came together that night, and it was really something to see, guys, that I've led the charge in mutilating many times, put aside all those differences and all that bad blood to combine against a greater threat in the NWA Elite. And it looks like Slim J is going to be coming back in 2 weeks to take on Sean Tempers for the Anarchy title based on the post-match involvements there. Trying to get my rejects team back together and see what's going to happen from there. NWA Anarchy will be back next weekend on Saturday night, May the 26th, in Cornelia, Georgia. Will the rejects and myself be there? Only time will tell. We've got a formulated game plan, and we got to figure out what's going on in the next step of this war because it's very clear that these men have declared war. We're not going to take it laying down. There is going to be a whole lot more blood shed before this is over with, so you might as well put out some buckets and get your tarpaulin ready and all the cleaning supplies and hazmat materials you can find in NWA Anarchy because this one is going to get messy. Tomorrow night, the Reverend and the Rejects return to Rossville, Georgia for Empire Pro Wrestling. That's 22 Austin Avenue. You can search Empire Pro Wrestling on Facebook. Find their official page there. A whole lot of action there in Rossville. They're moving to their every first and third Saturday night cards there for Empire Pro Wrestling. And then NWA Chattanooga returns to Sonny Daisy Middle School on May the 25th. That's next Friday, 8 o'clock p.m. bell time. Adult tickets are $10. Children only $5. I've got a loaded card. Tank taking on the Hit for Hire, Bobby Moore. We got the Deadly Sin 7 against Drew Haskins in a Southern Heavyweight title match with no count out. We got Kyle Matthews taking on Christian Hayne. We have Jesco Blues going to be in the house. Temptation, Shawn Tempers, of course, will be there. And a whole lot more. Go to NWAChattanooga.com for more details. And now we'll move along to the music news. Of course, this past week marked the anniversary of 2 years it's been since we lost one of the greatest vocalists in the history of rock and roll and heavy metal. That's Mr. Ronnie James Dio, to the unfortunate bout of stomach cancer. He was commemorated this week by all in the metal community. Tributes are paid across the globe to the great Ronnie James Dio. If you follow us on Facebook, we shared some YouTube videos we found of Ronnie James. That's facebook.com/midnightblackmass if you want to tune in with us there to get the full interactive experience. But just want to send out our well wishes to the essence of Ronnie James Dio, wherever he may be floating about. Truly an insurmountable loss to rock and roll was losing that man. Black Sabbath's Tony Iommi reflected the loss this week on Facebook as well, as he fights his own battle with cancer. So just another shout out to get well soon to Tony Iommi, and rest in peace, Ronnie James Dio. Speaking of Black Sabbath, the Bill Ward and Black Sabbath contention continues as Bill confirms that he will not, in fact, be joining the Black Sabbath reunion tour, and has some very poignant feedback about why not and the exact details surrounding that on his Facebook. Black Sabbath camp has issued a statement stating that they will make no comment. I guess issuing a statement wasn't really necessary to do that. But I suppose they didn't want to just do nothing on the position. So they said they were going to do nothing. But unfortunate for the fans, like, I don't really know the details other than what they put, and everybody's got a side to the story. So, you know, I can't really take sides. All those guys were very influential to me. And, you know, I just, they're getting on up there, and life's short, and I just hope they make amends and are able to squash this before a Black Sabbath reunion with all four of them is not possible because they're not here anymore. And that's really my only comment on the matter. Testament, you know, one of my all-time favorite thrash metal bands, back in the saddle. They're still kicking ass after all these years of San Francisco Bay Area thrash sound. No better defined than in the hands of Chuck Billy, Eric Peterson, Alex Skolnick. The Testament, they have revealed cover art and release date for their new album, Dark Roots of the Earth, that will drop July 27th in Europe and July 31st in the United States, and we are very much looking forward to that. I reached out to Testament's management a few times. They're a little more difficult to get a hold of, so we're still going to try our damnedest to get perhaps someone from the Testament camp on the show, just because we're such fans of their work, and you know, we'd appreciate giving them the opportunity to spread their sound and let people know that they're still kicking major ass all over the country. Another big tour announced. You know, we talked about the big summer tours, but as we're going into the fall, even more big acts have been announced coming out. Rush is coming out in November on tour, and definitely got to see Rush. It's something's got to happen. And then, of course, for the heavier metal fans, in September, they've announced this great tour of Lamb of God as a headliner, followed by Cartoon Network's own Death Clock and the French metalers Gojira. They have headlined or have teamed up for a North American tour to travel all across the United States. Going to be plenty of dates close to the Midnight Black Mass and the Compound home offices here. So Rev would like to get out to those as well. But, you know, there's only so many days, and when you're a busy man, it's hard to make it out to all these. Very excited still for the concerts that I've got lined up for this summer. Kiss, Alice Cooper, got my Motley Crue with Kiss, and Iron Maiden, of course, with Alice Cooper. It's going to be huge. But all right, fans, that's all for the music news this week. Got a special, before we go into the Muji Movie Minute, I think this is a good segue for this. We're now, you know, we featured some interesting segments, some off-color segments, if you will, in the past on the Midnight Black Mass. We featured the Seance of the Damned, and we've had, among other, let's say, less than sane special guests. So one thing that we've been doing here, now with that in mind, we've actually gotten some top-secret access to some upcoming movie trailers. And, you know, the studios heard us ragging on Battleship during the Avengers review. And Battleship, you know, is coming out in theaters this week and looks to be the biggest Hollywood budget movie of the summer. Not getting terrible reviews in all honesty, but we were ragging on the Battleship and the board game movies. And sure enough, well, we got something from the studio that did not quell our fears on board game movies becoming a trend. And they're very exclusive here from Hasbro on the Midnight Black Mass exclusive movie trailer right here.
This Halloween, Hasbro, the toy company who brought you Transformers and G.I. Joe, who brought you the board game company Parker Brothers, that brought you Battleship and the upcoming Tim Burton's Monopoly, presents its first foray into the world of horror cinema. In deepest, darkest Africa, it's a race. It's a chase. Hurry up and save your face. Who'll survive? No one knows. Zooey Deschanel stars in Hungry, Hungry Hippos.
That hippo looks a lot like Lily Allen. That's interesting.
And we're back on the program. And there you heard it, the official trailer for Hungry, Hungry Hippos coming to a theater near you this October. But we'll see now that it's leaked on the Midnight Black Mass. Perhaps they'll avoid it. It is now time for the Muji Movie Minute. Welcome to the show. Live in the studio here tonight is the one and only great Muji, who has scoured the compound and beyond for the best and worst of horror cinema. And we found a little bit of both in Chillerama here, 2011's Chillerama, an anthology, if you will, a love letter to the grindhouse genre. Muji, my man, what's your thoughts?
Well, got a few. Chillerama, like you said, was a grindhouse-esque movie. Basic premise for the movie, there's a bunch of friends to drive in. They're watching all these mini-movies throughout the movie, and the main plot's kind of going on with the drive-in there. It's broken down basically into four segments. There's one really short movie that they watched. It's, I guess it's kind of funny. It's just a movie about shitting. But there's three of them, but I'd say they hit one out of the three. One was funny. It was pretty decent. The other two, not the greatest. They got the movie that was actually interesting. They come up with one where there's a giant sperm that's chasing everybody around. It's almost like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, but it's a semen. This guy ends up he goes on a trial pill, goes to the doctors, having some problems, gets a pill, gets home, gets a boner, and it hurts really bad. And then he goes back to the doctor, and the doctor tells him if he gets a boner that he needs to jack off as quick as he can because the semen is growing gigantically inside of him. And then when he gets rid of the semen, after he masturbates, the semen goes and tries to eat everyone in the town. And it's pretty funny because it's got a lot of semen jokes, a lot of boner jokes. Semen eventually blows up and everyone gets a semen bath at the end of it. I mean, it's, you know, it's a pretty bottom-of-the-barrel humor, but it was funny nonetheless.
Yeah, I particularly enjoyed the first one and the giant citywide bukkake party that happens when the fucking semen monster gets blown up by the nuke. It just had me in stitches. I thought it was far and above the best part of the trilogy. I really, really enjoyed as you said, it was juvenile. But, you know, if you can't laugh at somebody getting drenched in cum, what can you laugh at?
That's very true. It's always funny unless it's you. But the second of the movies, the mini movies within the movie, was a movie where it's set in Nazi Germany. And it started out okay, but it wasn't that great. It basically ended up, the plot kind of melted away, and they just tried to cram as many movie efforts as possible into it. And that was that one. That's all I'll say about it. And then the third one, the gayest movie that I've ever seen, probably, because it was supposed to be, was about what they called a werebear, which basically... it's like a gay, it's like a really, really, really gator grease. There's this new kid in town who gets a bit by this other guy, and he turns into a werewolf, but a werewolf that wants to have sex with dudes. And that's basically the whole movie. And then he decides to befriend those guys. And then that's pretty much it. And the main plot is they're watching the movie, and they're watching all these movies at the drive-in as all this is going on. There's like a kind of mini zombie attack going on at the drive-in where they're all trying to get away. And it's there were some high points, even though all those movies sucked. It was, you know, it tried. There were boobs throughout the thing, which I always appreciate. You got to see the girl from Scream Queens.
Yeah, Gabby West from Scream Queens. Let's say season 2. I don't think she was the original winner, but anyone remembers? That's right, yeah. Tanedra, the what's-her-futs, won the first season. So this Gabby West chick won season 2 of Scream Queens, which was a VH1 reality show offering, basically. I guess they were already actresses in most cases, but up-and-comers a chance of a role in a Saw movie. And this chick won it, and now you see her turning up in this Chillerama in the I Was a Teenage Werebear short. And, you know, that one, I didn't care for it as much either. Like, not as, like, because it was overtly gay. It was, like, whatever. But
it was just overtly terrible.
Yeah, it was just overtly bad. It had a couple of funny jokes in it, but that was about its only redeeming quality. I liked the Hitler one probably a little more than you did. I thought that, but I did agree with you. It started out as something halfway intelligent and then kind of degenerated, but it was the Diary of Anne Frankenstein. And I can't remember this actor's name for the life of me. If you've seen Grandma's Boy, which is a cult movie amongst a lot of the awesome people that I know, he played the villain in that movie, J.P., the evil computer programmer, video game tech guy, and it was really stole the movie, so it was a treat to see him playing Hitler in a very comedic slapstick fashion. And I thought it was a little better than, you know, average. It was certainly better than I Was a Teenage Werebear, but it wasn't as good as the first one, I thought, in the overall plot. But it was fun. It was a love letter to the grindhouse genre. You know, it takes place in an old drive-in that's closing down, and they're showing all these creature features and what have you. And like you said, they made a lot of movie references, almost to the point of overkill. I guess we get the joke after you beat that dead horse into the fucking ground. But, you know, it was definitely played for laughs. The whole thing was, it was, you know, all pretty much tongue-in-cheek. And I thought, you know, for what I guess it was trying to do, it succeeded, and, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing more things of that ilk, possibly with better stories or maybe better directors attached or what have you, but I thought they were under a decent idea.
Yeah, and it was pretty low budget, too, so, I mean, obviously they were kind of working with what they had, and some of the guys, the people you know, on the segment that actually had Gabby from Scream Queens was directed by... I think Tim Sullivan is his name. He was one of the judges on Scream Queens. And then one of the other segments was directed by Adam Green, who made Hatchet and Hatchet 2. And so he's previously had good movies. And then also one of his buddies, a director named Joe Lynch, were in the FearNet show Holliston. They're the stars of that. He directed one of the other segments. It was decent. It's one of those movies that, as a big time horror fan, I was happy to see, even though, you know, a couple of them, the Werebear one and then the second half of the Diary of Anne Frankenstein got a little tough to watch, but it had enough good stuff in it to make it worth watching. So I'd say it's 50% well done. That's what I would go with.
50%, you know, not the best, not the worst.
By
but
far, not the worst.
A return to the horror genre, fans, and we will issue a bit of an apology to you. We've been letting our nerd flag fly a little and getting a little carried away on the comic book and comic book movie coverage with the Avengers coming out. We were very excited. Now, we've seen Avengers. We have jacked off all over its face. And so now we can move back into the horror genre and we can appease you fans that have been dutifully following us here on the Muji Movie Minute for horror movie reviews on the Midnight Black Mass. Any final thoughts before we bring our special guest on the line for the evening? Moods, anything for next week?
Nothing yet for next week.
Oh, that's right. Hey, thanks for reminding me. This show will be off next week because we've got NWA Chattanooga, but I think I'll actually try to reschedule a daytime show on Saturday of next week, do something short just because we already had the break with vacation last week. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, outstanding. Well, thank you for joining the show, Muji. Got a little music here for you. Going to give you a taste of our guest before we bring him on the line. This is Gideon Smith with a song that was featured in Sons of Anarchy. The song's called Black Cat Road. back on the program, you just heard Gideon Smith and the Dixie Damned from the 2008 album South Side of the Moon. That song was called Black Cat Road. And now, fans, on the line, we do have our special guest. Don't find entertainment in this man's personal pain, because he'll give it back to you one day. The G.I.D. is his name. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Gideon Smith, welcome to the program.
Hey, Riff, how you doing, man? Thanks for having me back.
I'm doing fan-fucking-tastic, and thank you for returning to the Midnight Black Mass. I've been drinking.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, man. Doing very good.
Outstanding, man. Outstanding. Well, you've been a busy guy in the last time we spoke to you. First of all, it's just a pleasure to have you back with us. You were one of the earliest guests we had, and your appearance along with, of course, Robert Everett and Hank Three, Unknown Henson, some of the early programs that we had, they really helped launch what we're doing here at the Midnight Black Mass. And since then, we've had some movie stars and some Marvel comic book writers and more. And, man, I just want to thank you for taking the time to do that. And that's just in general in your life and your career. What's been going on since the last time you were on the show?
Hey, man, that's fantastic. And thank you for having me on the show again. Glad to hear that things are going really well for you. And that's really cool. I know you've had a lot of great individuals on the show since we last spoke, and glad to hear that it's going so well for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's good. Things are great, man. I'm doing fantastic. I really appreciate it, and just things keep getting better, and just rolling strong and wise, feeling good and clear, and it's better every day, man.
That's outstanding to hear, and we hope that continues for you, brother.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when you first joined the show late last year, your new album, 30 Weight, was just a few days out of its release. Now it's been out. It's soaked in. It's marinated with the fan base in the eyes of public consumption. What kind of reception are you getting from the critics and the fans out there regarding 30 Weight on Small Stone Records?
Man, I tell you, it has been fantastic. It's been great. It is doing so well, and I think that it's possibly the most universally well received record yet. I think that the I'm very proud of the first and second album, but there's something about this one that seems to have resonated with a lot of people, and the reception has been really, really great, very excellent. And I know that when I'd spoken to you, it was fairly new, and in time since, it's definitely gathered a lot of great acclaim and feedback, and some fantastic reviews, and a lot of love from the old school fans and people that are just getting into my music, and it's really wonderful. I think that there was no conceived plan to go any particular direction or to do anything, just to make a new record, and I always feel that quality is very important. And when we did this one, there was no preconceived plan or direction, but it seems to have hit some targets in places that I would not expect, and I think that I'm just very glad that people seem to enjoy it and get something good out of it, whatever they find there, and know that people all over the place are playing it and playing it loud.
Damn straight. And I will add my two cents into that as far as the album goes. I've not heard it front to back, but you've got quite a bit of it out there for public consumption or that on YouTube and what have you, and I've heard a lot of the tracks. Black Fire, Barry, has a ring of a classic cult tune, but of course with that signature Gideon Smith sludgy stamp on it. And then I like you got the all the way over to the cover of I Bleed Black by St. Vitus, which is fucking outstanding. Actually, do you mind telling me just a little bit about like why you selected that as a particular cover to do on the album and just what that song means to you personally?
Yeah, definitely. I've always been a big Vitus fan. I think that's one of the ones that, is everybody's favorite for many years. And I always wanted to cover it or just play it live at a show. We never did. It was just something to where I had that in mind, that it would be really great to do that. Originally, my plan was just to go in and just record a tribute straight, just like the Vitus version. And through the recording of it and the growth process, it became a sort of a different take on the song, but still faithful to the vibe and the great songwriting. But we kind of grew with it in a little bit of different directions and dynamics and stuff like that. So it's not just a straight cover. And in the end, I think I was more pleased to try to do something of my own take with it, because you don't want to try to equal a great song and imitate it. If you're going to cover it at all, do something interesting with it. It's worth the time of the listener to enjoy a different version, because you're never going to do the original better than the people that did it. You know, you just want to do something interesting that makes it a fun version of a great song. And so covering I Bleed Black, you know, who doesn't love it? This is one of those classics. But to get to record it, once we got down to the business of really doing it, it had a bit of a different spin, and some people might see that as not being faithful to the original as it could be. Some people might enjoy that it is a little different, but at the same time, it's still very dark and very heavy and creepy. Yeah, I know that we love doing it. I'm glad people have enjoyed it, and you know, it's an honor any time I've covered a song by one of my favorite bands or gotten to record it. I think that it's always fun. It's an honor. It's kind of fun to step back from your own stuff and do one of your favorite songs. Who would turn that down? I kind of look at it like if you were in the crowd at one of your favorite a show of one of your favorite bands, and they said, "Would you like to get up and sing I Bleed Black?" Who's going to say no? You know, you'd love to get up there and do it too. And so,
no, damn straight.
Hell yeah. And so for me, having the chance to do something like that, or when we covered any of the songs in the past of other great artists, you jump at the chance to have fun with something that you really love. And so that's how we approached it. I'd always wanted to do it. It just took a long time. And 30 Weight album was just the right time to fit it in and do something fun with it, and it grew into a different take on it. But like I said, it makes it interesting, because you can't equal the original. You might as well try something a little different.
If you're in
your own version, you know.
Exactly. You did such a good job of translating that into something that was unique to yourself, while still keeping that the signature hypnotic groove of the song. That's one of those songs you can just kind of tune out to, and it's just like, you know, it's the same, but it's different consistently, and it's part of the appealing part of that song. And, you know, I think you also have a good point talking about covers and doing something different. If you've heard it the first time, you don't need to hear it identically the second time. Certainly, you know, you can appreciate the effort that goes into that. But look at like Judas Priest and some of the stuff that they covered. You know, it was pretty obscure out there stuff, and they put a radically unique spin on it. Things like Diamonds and Rust and the Green Monolishi.
Yeah, definitely.
And so, yeah, fantastic insight as always, Big Gid.
Thank
and we
you,
appreciate it.
Thank you.
And well, moving along from 30 Weight, which continuing to tear things up, but you've allowed the expansion of that through a new internet presence. And you've done that with a brand new Facebook page and an awesome new website. And that fans, that's www.gideonsmith.net. We encourage everyone to check it out. It's extremely informative, includes a lot of cool tidbits, interviews, news articles, et cetera, about you and your career. Do you care to just talk a bit about how that came out and why now you've decided to go viral, so to speak?
Man, I tell you what, I think I'm probably very late in getting that done. I think I should have had that done years ago, but you know, I'm glad that it's finally come to the point where I have a website like that that's what I feel is professional and quality that people that like my music could enjoy or would be interested in it. One thing that I was determined was that if there was going to be one, it wasn't going to be half-assed. I definitely wanted to include things that would be interesting and or you know, just informative and show history to my music and from 1997 to the present day, and then also things just that, you know, if you're a fan in the old days of rock and roll, say you and me were growing up, rock and roll, metal, whatever, if there was a magazine that came out and it had an article about one of your favorite bands, and not to say this isn't true today, but I'm just speaking of back in the day, you had a pictures, you know, interview. The longer the article was, the more that was there, history, interesting things. It was very exciting, and it was rare if you found an article that had one of your magazine had an article about one of your favorite bands. It was very like a cool, exciting thing to find, especially if you didn't see magazines like that a lot where you lived or you grew up. And now the internet, not that written magazines aren't still so prevalent and enjoyable, the paper, you know, printed magazine, it's just that the internet has taken the place of so much of that we, not to speak for you, but I would assume that we both might have enjoyed growing up, the cool metal magazine or whatever, or maybe when Rolling Stone, you know, really great back in the day, things like that. So with a web page, it's like the unfolding magazine that you can find. It's free if you get on the internet and you find a page about a band you enjoy, and it's sort of like if you like a very obscure rock band and you find a website that's got pictures you've never seen or interviews or a collection of printed materials you might not have seen those magazines when they came out. Songs you didn't hear. It's very enjoyable. So if there was going to be one concerning my music, I didn't want it to be half-assed, and I didn't want it to be something that you just looked at once and you weren't interested in again. I wanted it to be something that would be enjoyable for people that cared about what I do. And so I have had people tell me, oh, he's got this old-school website. It's really cool. I didn't really realize that would be old school. But I think that with things like Facebook, MySpace, Reverb Nation, whatever, it might be perceived that way. But to me, that's what's enjoyable if you, as a music fan, would be to find things you hadn't seen about a band that you liked or whatever. So stepping back from it and looking at my own music, if there were people that wanted to find those things that they might have missed or things that they found that they enjoyed and lost or whatever, I wanted there to be a home base for those things that people could go to. Plus, it probably was hard for them to find a T-shirt or different things they might have wanted. And so for me, the new website was going to be the headquarters that would be as easy to find as anything. And I'm pleased that it is not just something you pass right by. You're able to find some cool things on there. So, you know, we're going to keep it going, and I'm glad that you took a look at it and that you've enjoyed it. Like I said, there's a lot of history to what I do, and then there's a lot going on now and more to come. So it needed to be the headquarters that served the place that some of these, sort of more popular websites, they might not hold as much weight to the experience.
Well, and as you said, it's a centralized location for everything relating to Gideon Smith. And I'm like you, I grew up with a magazine looking for copies of Metal Maniacs and Hit Parader, Rolling Stone, you know, just depending on what age I was and what I was into. But, you know, always looking for those interviews and looking for those pictures and posters. And, you know, while the era of the magazine seems to be dwindling, it's still out there. You know, with the internet, and especially when somebody puts the time into it like you have. And you know, I may say it's an old school website, but like everybody seems to want to use Flash nowadays, as like the Flash programs to set up websites. I'm not a big fan of that anyway. I, I prefer just the classic, something that has the information there. And as you say, it's all centralized, and it's a record of what you've done. It's a historical account all in one place where you don't have to go here and there for this magazine to that magazine to collect it and piece together the history of Gideon Smith. It's all right there for you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that you you enjoy it, and we're still working on it, but I'm real happy with it so far. The guy's done a great job with it, and I feel that I have input on it, which I'm glad about. And I think that you know, if like I said, if I stood back in my input of it and said, what would I really dig if this was a band that I enjoyed? What would I want to see? And a lot of people, I'm sure, do that in bands or filmmakers, whatever. They say, what would I like to see if I was the guy standing out about something I really enjoyed? So then I kind of said, maybe some of this, maybe some of that. And so, you know, I'm really happy that it's up there. And like I said, I felt like it was probably, it's 10 years late, you know, but at the same time, it's you know, better late than never, and it's maybe the right time was now, so... You know, I'm just psyched that it's out there, and like you said, people have a place they can go and enjoy hearing the news or looking at old stuff they liked or whatever. But it's not just part of some social network jive, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, fans, that's www.gideonsmith.net. I'll make sure to go over and check that out.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. You have a big live show this Saturday night, man. Charlotte, North Carolina at the Chop Shop. Fans in the Charlotte area, that's 399 East 35th Street in Charlotte, North Carolina. You're going to be playing with Chapel Grove and Deuteronomy Anno Domini. Do you care to give our North Carolina listeners some details on how they can get tickets, what's going to be going down, what kind of set they can expect? All the fun, my man, all the fun.
Yeah, man, it's going to be great. We're rocking out tomorrow night at the Chop Shop. This will be a big night for a lot of good southern heavy rock. And the show starts tomorrow night at 9, and we've got two great bands on the bill. I think for our set, we're going to cover some songs off the three albums and a few songs off the first EP. Throw in a couple of surprises, and just get up there and tear it up. I think that last time I talked to you, I'm not sure we had gotten back to playing hard rock shows. I'd played some acoustic shows there for a while. Had not been performing live that often, and since I spoke with you, we have played some big heavy rocking shows, and they've gone really great. It's been wonderful to get up there and blast it out, and you know, so tomorrow night is another occasion for Dionysian revelry with rock and roll, and I'd love to see you all, so please, you know, anyone interested, come down and come up and say hello, and you know, hopefully we'll be rocking it out with everything we got, so you know, come on down. It's when I'm there, it's my house, and you're my guest. So come to the house, and you know, let's have a good time together. So that's how I look at it. I never look at a show, a commercial product advertisement. I never look at it like a nightclub entertainment. I look at it like a ritual that we are going to share, and that's you and me, and the crowd, and the music, and the band, and we're there to pass that that musical torch around for people to feel the power of the riff and the song, and to sing along if they love it, and so it's the gift that I want to share with you. So when we do it, we try to do it right. So when I get up there, I want to see you too. So you know, to anyone interested, please come out, check out all the bands, and you know, we're gonna tear it up late into the night.
That's tomorrow night, once again, fans in the Charlotte area at the Chop Shop. And you can head on over to GideonSmith.net for more details about that. I'm sure they won't mind selling you some tickets. And just the last time we talked in depth about the now out-of-print book you wrote, Way of the Outlaw Spirit. It includes some thought-provoking philosophy about life, love, spirituality, and reaching your goals and what you have to do to get there in this crazy journey we're all on. And as the great Bill Hicks once said, it's just a ride. But on your ride since the book came out, have you reached any new great spiritual discoveries or epiphanies that, say, had the book come out today, might have been included in the text?
Definitely, I think so. I think at the time, during its writing, I basically included what was going through my mind at that period of my life. I was spending a lot of time alone. I was holed up in my house. I wasn't doing a lot of music. I'd been going through some ups and downs of hard times, and writing what I needed to get out. Since it's been 5 years or so, looking back on it, there's things I would maybe have taken out, other things I needed to include that slipped my mind, many things. But the project itself needed to be finished, a culmination of what I had to get out and capture at that time. And it was before the South Side of the Moon album, so it was kind of during some of that recording, but before that was really done or going to be released. So it was a project that I dedicated that time to. Now, in the years since, you ask, have my adventures and misadventures and near-death experiences taught me any more lessons or knowledge, whatever, since then? Definitely. And I think that the book, it's been a while since I have really looked it over, but I think that each chapter could have been a book into itself. It's possible maybe if I was to go back, I would have written a series of books based off maybe each chapter. But it was a collection of what was going through my mind and spirit and what I needed to get out. And I wanted to see that project to its publication and then move on and needed to get to work on the South Side album. Then plenty of space and time went by, and then I had to get on 30 Weight. So a lot has gone through my mind for sure. As far as specific things I would have included looking back, I will save that for future writing. And I think that there'll definitely be more writing, more books to come. And I think that the experiences since will be revealed and will grow in future writing. I think the book didn't really end like a look forward to part two type story or, you know, anything like that. It was, I didn't know if I was going to write another one, and you know, I just something that I needed to do at the time. But there will be more in the future, and it will go, it will kind of move from there. And so I think I have a whole lot to say and get out. It's 5 years later, and the next step in it, as far as writing, will take up from there. Perhaps a series of books, shorter books about just a particular subject, perhaps a very long book about many, many things. But which, however it comes out, is the way that it needs to be. So to answer your question, many lessons learned, many lights came on, a few things you disregard that you might have held dear at one time, proven not really the best for you, and other things that you stand very strong in your conviction. So future writing will just be further down the path of the journey of the Iron Soul. And that's how I look at it.
Well, there you have it, fans. Big news, in my opinion, that Gideon Smith is going to be heading back to the writing table to perhaps produce more literature. And I have to get a copy of some of this before it goes out of print this time.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate your interest and your kind regards.
Hey, anytime, man, anytime. It is always a pleasure. You know, on the lighter side of things, I know even though you're an accomplished musician in your own right, you always remain a fan at heart. And this is a big summer to be a fan.
If you were planning on getting out there and catching any of the big tours that are going to be around this summer.
Man, I hope so. I know there's a lot of people out there that are probably classic bands to guys like you and me. I don't have any special plans for any particular shows just yet, but if I'm able to make any of the great bands coming around, I know there's a lot going on, and I look forward to it. I know no particular plans right now, but I know a lot of the bands that we all have loved a lot in our youth up to today. Some of them are out there again, and you know, you don't want to miss the chance to see them. You don't know when they're going to play again. I was always a big Maiden fan. I've only seen them once. It was a fantastic concert, and if I could go see Maiden, I'll definitely try not to miss that. And you know, so it just kind of depends on what I can make and who's coming around. And I have to admit that the last concert that I saw, as far as a concert, was when The Cult had come through Charlotte and played at the Fillmore, and they were unbelievable. They were so good, and it was great. So I'm really excited to hear the new Cult album, and I know it's out here in the next week or so. And if I get a chance to see them again, I would love to do it. They were fantastic. Ian was great. He was in great form, great voice. And Billy Duffy was just blowing me away with his guitar playing. So the lineup they've got right now is great, and they were just fantastic. It was one of those concerts that they say if you're in a band and you play for so many years and you become kind of salty, it's hard to go to a concert and put yourself back in the place before you went down that road and just enjoy it purely as a fan. If you can do that, it's a gift, because you're not in a frame of mind as a band guy. You're in the frame of mind of, I really love this artist and I just want to see him play. And that's really healthy if you can step back and do that. And when I saw The Cult, within a few minutes, to me, it was just like, I couldn't believe it. I was getting to see The Cult again. And you know, I've seen them many times, but this particular show that I saw, now that they're playing again, they were so good, and I loved every minute of it. And Billy Duffy, you know, he's a great guitar player, so underrated. And by the time he started warming up, he was just tearing up that whole show. He was so great, and it was so good to see them out there, just feeling their vitality and everything. So I will definitely not miss a chance to see The Cult. Love to see Maiden. Love to see if I had a chance, you know, like Alice Cooper or Priest or Motorhead. Not real big into, you know, some of the more glam-oriented bands. It just never really was my thing. But right. It just depends on who's coming around, you know, and where I can, you know, I can catch you. But you know, some of these bands, they always say they're not going to tour again, and then they do. And some of them, you don't know if they'll ever play again. So it just depends, you know. But I'm probably as excited about it as you are. So, you know, I definitely understand.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I got fucking tickets to Iron Maiden and Alice Cooper together next month. And then we got Kiss and Motley Crue coming up later. I saw Scorpions 2 years ago on their retirement tour, and it was just one of those things that make you feel like a kid again.
Oh, man, that's great.
And I saw Danzig last year. I think it was last year. It was fucking awesome, promoting the newest album, that Red Death Sabbath that he'd released. It was fucking great. Sounded great. Band was great. Fucking awesome. Made me feel like I was fucking 14 again.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You know, is the music will take you there, and I would love to see Danzig again. I haven't seen him in probably at least 10 years. And the last time I did, he had the guy from Prong on guitar, Tommy Victor. Yeah,
yeah.
They were great, you know. And I'd love to see Danzig. And I'm sure he's one of those artists that if you're in the mood and excited, by the time you know they're just about to start, then you're in that frame of mind, you know. So I definitely know what you mean. I don't know where if he's touring right now or anything like that, but I'll look out for him. And I'd heard he played some festivals and things like that, but not anywhere near where I live. So I don't really know.
He's done these Danzig Legacy shows, and they've been like limited dates, kind of like those Big Four deals that they did. But it was like he's played some of like the Misfits guys and some of the Sam Hain guys. And then the fucking, he would do the fucking, just Danzig shit, like, you know, and like three sets. And just like a tribute to all of the shit that he's played over the years. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, when I saw Danzig, it was Tremont Music Hall, I'm going to say 10 years ago, but he was, you know, playing all the hits, and he had a great lineup, it was very cool. I always thought Prong was amazing. I saw Prong two or three times in the Beg to Differ era, and those guys were so good. And so when Tommy Victor was playing with Danzig, if I'm correct, he was ripping it up. Even though I do miss seeing the guys from the classic albums that you would know, it was cool to see Tommy Victor up there. The few times I saw Prong, the sound was amazing as far as the sound mix, live mix, and they were really going at it. I think that drummer was in the Swans back in the day, and I think so. Yeah, he was badass. So you know, they were definitely cool. But you know, the Danzig, I have not heard the new album, but I look forward to checking it out.
It's very good. I would give it a high recommendation. I'd say it's some of the best stuff he's put out in several years. You know, he's been back to the classic Danzig sound for a few albums now. I think he really captured that, but without it sounding like, you know, he's just trying to retread old ground. Like, it was really energetic, and like you could tell, like, he really put something into it and had something to say, and I really enjoyed it.
That's great. Well, you know, I mean, he's such a great songwriter. And a great singer and a great songwriter. And if you look at the early Misfits, those songs the Misfits had so many good songs. And in the era of his Misfits time of Glenn Danzig, there were so many great songs that are these short little, almost like 50s rock songs, given the punk rock feel and his horror image, their horror image, you know, and everything. But the vocals, they're great. The melody is great. You know, they're such good songs. Then later, when he got into Danzig, it became more heavy, more serious. But it also, they're just great, great. He was writing just these great, great songs, and especially those first three albums, I think the ones I'm most familiar with. And I think that, you know, for all of Danzig's heavy vibe and reputation and everything, if you just look at the heart of it, he's a great songwriter and singer. And, you know, the people that weren't familiar, you know, there's people that are diehard Misfits fans and people that got into Danzig and then got into Misfits. But if you look at him all along, he's been writing great songs for many, many years. And with a lot of artists, you know, if they have four or five good songs, that's outstanding. But, you know, Danzig has written, you know, many, many good songs.
Oh, like you just said, the first three albums, I mean, there's not a dud on the bunch. They are just from first track to last, just totally kick ass. What are you spinning these days? I know you said on Facebook the other day you were cranking the hell out of some Led Zeppelin, and that's always good,
man,
for the soul. What else is in your player, man?
That is no lie. I've been in a big Zeb kick here for a while. Probably, you know, Motorhead, Priest, Maiden, Somewhere in Time. I've just been wearing that out. If you could wear out a CD, I've been wearing out Somewhere in Time now for a long time. Kind of rediscovered it and just really enjoying it. Morbid Angel, Altars of Madness. And let's see, a lot of instrumental music sometimes just to kind of wind down. I like to listen to instrumental music sometimes, like, you know, just for ambiance, and cranking up some big rock, you know, AC/DC, Back in Black, Cult Electric, some Blue Cheer, And, you know, some of the great 60s, I'm always, you know, big into the Doors. There's times where I listen to the Doors very heavily for, kind of get lost in the Doors for several months. Strange Days, albums like that, you can really get lost in them, first album. And then I'll step back and not listen to them for a while, and then I'll kind of fall back into it. And so lately I've been back big into the Doors. And, you know, as far as on a, as far as newer bands, not really that much. I haven't really heard a lot of new, brand new releases here in the last little while, but a lot of my old favorites in country, you know, Hank Sr., David Allan Coe, and, you know, the classic classic songs from, you know, Southern Rock, Skinner and Allman Brothers, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, always.
Big Sabbath, always in the Big Sabbath phase.
Yeah, Sabbath never goes away for me either. It's kind of like what you said about the Doors albums. It's just you come and go through really intense phases of going through that catalog, and then you put it on the back burner for a while, and then you bring it back out. But Sabbath never really goes away.
Oh, you know it. I mean, Sabbath is one of those bands, their vibe is so, it's just so heavy and unique that even with the, you know, millions of bands that they inspired, and there's nothing really like, just once you start getting into Sabbath, it's not depressing music. It's not even metal. It's just like this music that's, you know, like a lot of people don't hear the blues in Sabbath, but it's so there. But it starts to, Sabbath, you know, they start to pull you in, and you get this vibe off Sabbath that nobody else, you know, can really give you from that time. And you know, and not to say there aren't many bands that that capture their own inspiration from that vibe, because I've sought to do it myself, but there's nothing like just hitting the source, you know.
Yeah, you just to sit back and groove out to those albums. The first, like, what, the first four, five with Ozzy, six maybe, but then also the first couple with Dio as well fall right in there, like Heaven and Hell in particular. Mob Rules is good. And you know, it's just like, it's just a whole other world. It really is. It's the Sabbath world. And speaking of Dio, I just actually wanted to ask about your reflections on the man, being that this week is 2 years ago this week that we lost the man himself, Ronnie James, to stomach cancer. What kind of influence did Ronnie James Dio have on your life, Mr. Smith?
Man, I'll tell you what, it's a great tragedy. I hate to think of it. And also 2 years, that's crazy to think about that. I never did meet him, but from what I was told, he was a very kind gentleman, and showed his fans a lot of appreciation and stuff like that, and I really respect that. I think he was a fantastic singer, and there's, you know, Dio just, he definitely was one of the most influential figures in heavy metal. One time I went into a tattoo shop, and this was like maybe around 2001, something like that, and I walked in the shop, and I was just kind of looking around, and somebody started blasting the Man on the Silver Mountain, and you know, real loud, you know, it was killer, it was sound so good, and I'm like, God, he was such a good fucking singer. And and I was listening to that, and the guy came walking around the corner, and I said, well, I know this guy's cool, you know. And so whenever I hear that song, I remember that this incredible sound coming out around the corner, and this really, this guy turned out to later be one of my really good friends, come walking around the corner being like, dude, you know, Dio, you know. And so it's sort of like one of those, you know, little moments where people think about things. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of debate about what Dio contributed or not, but you can't take anything away from him. He was great. I mean, it's like when I say debate, I mean, a lot of people make a lot of claims. But no, he was great all around, and a fantastic singer, and definitely hate to see him leave the world. Even though, hard to believe it's been 2 years. I really wish I had gotten to meet him. I never did see him live, but powerful singer and a great influential figure.
Yeah, I never got to see him live either. Great regrets that I will carry with me for a long time in that respect. You talked about what a talent he was as a vocalist. And actually, you know, he went, his career spanned back well before even the days of Rainbow with Ritchie Blackmore. Even he was doing like 50s vocal bands, like doo-wop stuff with Ronnie and the Redcoats and some other stuff. So really had a great range of styles that he excelled at vocally.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. Sometimes when people get their listeners have one impression of what they are, they really have a long history before they got to that period or that time where people recognize them as one thing. And you're right, you wouldn't think of Dio's background like that, but he was probably damn good at whatever he chose to do. So.
Yeah, damn straight. And the music world continues to miss him.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's tragedy, and I think that, anytime somebody so talented leaves the world, but a lot of great music to keep his spirit alive, so.
Damn straight. So play that fucking Dio out your speakers, folks, loud this week for the man. But moving on, Gibb, we're going to wrap up the interview here momentarily. You've been on for a while, and, man, I always appreciate you taking your time.
Very well carved out, brother. Thank you for having me on tonight.
Yes, sir. You have carved out an impressive niche for yourself in this industry that most say is dead. You've started to adapt yourself to the modern era. You've been very much a DIY guy from the beginning. You've had a tribute album recorded in your honor. You've written a published book, as we've mentioned. You've had music immortalized into pop culture on TV shows that will forever be remembered, such as The Sopranos, Sons of Anarchy, among many others. What does the future hold for Gideon Smith, the man, as well as the Dixie Dam? My brother, are there any new mountains to climb for you?
Well, man, I'll tell you what. When I started this with my name and Dixie Dam in 97, I had a lot of dreams, and I had a dream and a vision. And I can say something which a lot of people probably can't say, and that is that a great deal of my dreams have come true and even surpassed my dream. So much of what I set out to do has come my way, and then in other ways things have surpassed even my hopes and for my music, and I'm so glad and that I've been able to do it, and I'm definitely not through. And so I think that the future is always time for more music and more magic and more. Magic and mayhem, but I think that it's been a long road, but I just keep looking ahead. You know, you can't look in the rearview mirror, and even if the past had some wonderful meaning, experiences and memories, is keep a sharp eye on tomorrow. And I'm just real thankful that my music's alive and well, and keeps in. Talking to a cool guy like you, that digging my groove, and keeping my eyes on tomorrow for more music, and just staying on the path, man. You know, it's like the old song says, the greatest adventure is what lies ahead.
And with that, I think there's no more perfect way to wrap up our conversation tonight. Gideon, thank you again for taking the time. Fans, get out to the Chop Shop tomorrow night in Charlotte, North Carolina. All of our Kakalaki area residents need to go check out the Dixie Dam, because they're going to be rocking the motherfucking house tomorrow night. And also, you want to go to GideonSmith.net. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up yet?
Man, all good. Thank you so much for having me on again. I'm glad your show's doing killer, and hope you're doing real well. And thank you for all the love and respect and appreciation for my music. And, man, wish you well in all ways, my friend.
Absolutely, man. Stay in touch. Keep me updated on them shows. I'm going to try to get out to see you live as soon as possible.
Yo, man, that would be great. Hope to see you soon.
All right, Gideon. Thank you again.
You too. Take care, brother.
All right, you too, man. Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, Gideon Smith, Gideon Smith of Dixieland, making his second appearance here on the Midnight Black Mass. Fantastic interview. I really, really enjoy talking with Gideon every chance I get. He is really a class act guy, very insightful. Love talking music and tunes with him. Didn't even get the horror movies. We seen him talk about that on Facebook, and there's a lot more we can talk about in relationship to that. So you can expect Gideon to be back on the show very, very soon. And that was outstanding. Friends, we got more. We're going to give you some more tunes from Gideon off the album we just talked about, 30 Weight off Small Stone Records. This song is called Black Fire. Our very special guest, Gideon Smith. Gideon Smith and the Dixie Damned with Black Fire off of the 2011 album 30 Awake off of Small Stone Records. Head on over to GideonSmith.net and pick up your copy today. But fans, now it is time where we take a look into the DC Comics animated television universe. It's time for another edition of TV Casualty. And where do we start? But with the Bat, of course. We continue our trek through Batman the Animated Series, still on season one, on the third disc of the collected edition now, with the episodes part one and two of The Cat and the Claw. These episodes mark the introduction of Selina Kyle, very famous Batman villain in the form of Catwoman to the show, and also a new villain by the name of Red Claw joining Batman the Animated Series. And so these actually were the first two episodes that aired on Batman the Animated Series, September 5th and 12th of 1992, respectively. Brief synopsis. Bruce Wayne is at a charity auction for a date with him, and a lady by the name of Selina Kyle is the woman who wins the date. And so around the same time, he encounters, as Batman, a new cat burglar calling herself the Catwoman. When Selina runs into trouble with a terrorist group known as the Red Claw and wants the Mountain Lion Sanctuary she's trying to protect, she decides to take matters into her own hands and investigate. But the leader of the Red Claw group, known as the Red Claw Original, attacks a military train and steals a viral plague, which she intends to release in Gotham if she isn't paid a ransom. Can Batman and Catwoman put aside their differences and work together to stop the Red Claw before it's too late? Well, of course they can, or there wouldn't be additional Batman episodes, and since these were the first two, it was kind of a necessity. But, in all honesty, you're usually going to hear me ranting and raving over Batman the Animated Series episodes, and not that I hated Cat and the Claw, but it wasn't the best. Wasn't the best offering of Batman the Animated Series. Interesting way to start the animated show. Of course, the movie Batman Returns came out in close proximity to the animated series, so there was no origin for Catwoman. There's no origin for the Penguin or Joker either, because of apparently due to movie reasons, they just wanted it to be a continuation of the films. It was very interesting tidbits there for the debut episode of Batman the Animated Series, The Cat and the Claw, Part 1 and 2. These episodes are brought to you by Kevin Altieri and Dick Sebast. And, of course, voices were your usual suspects on the Batman show, Kevin Conroy as Batman, etc. Coming up next week, See No Evil. This is a favorite episode of mine. It actually didn't air till February 24th of 1993, and features the plight of a man on the verge of losing his daughter to his ex-wife, and he exploits some unique technology to do so until the Batman interferes. So we have met Catwoman. We have gotten the dreadful villain of the Red Claw and her first and only appearance out of the way, never to be heard from again, thank God. And we can move Catwoman, who's a much more interesting character than this episode provided, onto more interesting things. And we move on in Batman the Animated Series, one of the greatest television shows ever made. I don't give a damn, animated, live action, what have you. And all fans of Batman the Animated Series, I would highly suggest head on over to Smodcast.com and go to the recent episode of Kevin Smith's Smodcast with he and Scott Mosier. Kevin is starting a new podcast called Fat Man on Batman, where he, who is an ultimate Batman fan, has written some great Batman stories in his own right in comics. He's doing a podcast dedicated solely the legend, the lore, the awesomeness of the Caped Crusader. And he's got an episode up right now all fans of Batman the Animated Series must listen to. It's about an hour and a half long interview with Paul Dini, who was the writer on just about every fucking cartoon ever made, to be quite honest with you. But in particular, Batman the Animated Series, he was the man that created Harley Quinn, which is an exclusive character for the animated series later adapted into the universe. He's the man who rewrote the origin of Mr. Freeze to include Nora, his wife, and really give him that emotional side that made you sympathize with him. There's a lot that he had involvement in on Batman the Animated Series. Actually, Detective Renee Montoya was another one of his creations. So yeah, I definitely want to go to smodcast.com and check out the Fat Man on Batman at the official Smodcast podcast with Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier. And fans, that's actually going to wrap it up for this week's show. I think we had a great edition of the program. Gideon Smith, always a pleasure to have on the show to talk to us and update us with what's going on in his life. Don't forget, tomorrow night I will be in Rossville, Georgia for Empire Progress, and the Rejects are returning from suspension, and we have a lot of innocence to pay for what they've done to us. The blood will be spilt in Rossville, Georgia tomorrow night, fans. But thank you for joining the show. This is the Reverend saying, until the light takes us, I will see you next time.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.